Hi, friends. Welcome to Bayou de Beltway. Today we're talking with author, media consultant, historian Robert Mann, also known as Bob Mann. Bob Mann has had a lengthy and storied career with nearly every political figure of note in Louisiana history since he first started working for Senator Russell Long. And then he continued to work for J. Bennett Johnston and Mary Landrieu and then Governor Kathleen Blanco. He is now at the Manship School. He holds the Manship Chair in Journalism at the Manship School of Mass Communications at Louisiana State University. And he's written 8 and sometimes 9, depending on how you count it, books to date. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Pearson. Great to be with you today.
Well, let's dive right in. I would have to say we're here to talk about your most recent book, which, of course, is Backrooms and Bayous, My Life in Louisiana Politics. And it describes really your career, and it's the focus is you. It's kind of a political autobiography of your career. But what I noticed early on reading the book, which I enjoyed very much, by the way, and I certainly recommend to anyone who is listening, is that it seems like you were kind of different right from the beginning. you in your book you talk about gaining politician signatures. How does that work, and what explains this?
I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, I think they're just kids who grow up interested in aviation and become pilots, and they're kids who want to be doctors and they become physicians. And I was just one of those kids who was interested in politics and public affairs from a very early age. And I also had parents who were somewhat political, you know, apolitical in a lot of ways, but they were politically aware, and they indulged and sometimes encouraged what I was doing. I think my mother was more worried about where it might lead me, but she never really actively discouraged me. And but when I started this little hobby of writing to politicians and other famous people, asking them for their autographs, people would respond, and I would end up writing to a lot of politicians, but some TV celebrities as well, but mostly politicians. And politicians are pretty good at responding to the public. So I would always get a response back from the political figures that I would write to. I was too young to realize in those days that I wasn't corresponding personally with these people. Politicians are very good at responding to constituent and other inquiries and correspondence by making you feel like, you know, they are literally responding to you when they've got staff people doing that for you. But I was too young to realize that, and I think that probably supercharged my interest, because I'm thinking, oh my God, Ronald Reagan's writing me personally. Ronald Reagan read my letter. Ronald Reagan, you know, is talking to me here. So that probably was the thing that really got me interested in politics and moved me along down the road to where I eventually went.
Well, you mentioned Ronald Reagan. Was there a person whose autograph you got that was the most exciting to you at the time? Was that it? Was it a Ronald Reagan?
Well, it was, you know, I wrote Ronald Reagan. I write in the book about how my parents were pretty politically conservative, and this was in the mid to late 60s, and they were supporters of Alabama Governor George Wallace, who was running for president at the time. And I remember writing to Wallace and got responses back from him, and I was really excited about that. You know, I'm not so proud of it today, but at the time it was, you know, this guy was a pretty famous person nationally and running for president, and he, you know, wrote a letter and signed a photograph to me. So that really was exciting. But, you know, my interests were pretty wide, because Hubert Humphrey, who was on the opposite end of the political spectrum at the time from Wallace, I wrote Humphrey. And Humphrey responded and sent me all kinds of material and a letter and autographed photograph. And I remember being really excited by that. I wrote J. Edgar Hoover. When Dwight Eisenhower died, I wrote Mamie, and she sent me a nice, you know, little card of thanks for the sympathy card. And, you know, just all kinds of people that I – Harry Truman. I got several pieces of correspondence from Harry Truman over the years. And yeah, it was just, it was exciting, and it was fun, and it really did whet my appetite for politics.
That's amazing. And to think I wasted my time writing Walt Disney. I could have been writing all these other people. Oh, man. So let's talk about George Wallace a little bit. And, you know, this is a personal book. It's a book about your career, but your book also charts your gradual migration from, you know, a quite conservative young man to where you are today, which you, by your own admission, is somewhat liberal. So how did that work in terms of your political biography?
You mean my political evolution?
Yes.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that I see it here on the LSU campus where I've been teaching for the last 15 years. And I think the same thing happened to me. You know, these young people show up on campus and they've lived with their parents for the first 18 years of their life. And most of them, not all of them, but a lot of them, most of them have, they're reflecting their parents' views, which, you know, it's understandable. They should. They've lived in this environment. They know what they know about the world, at least a lot of them do, from their parents, and they've adopted their parents' worldview, again, which is understandable. And so, like all these young people that I see grow and change and evolve over the time that they're sort of away from their parents and exposed to other ways of thinking, that happened to me when I went to, you know, arguably not a liberal bastion at then Northeast Louisiana University, now ULM, Monroe. But I was away from my parents, and I began to, I had professors who introduced me to different ways of thinking, and I had different sources of information, and I gradually drifted away from the really hard right conservatism of my parents. And I think it took going into politics and maybe seeing it up close and personal in Washington that really moved me more decidedly toward the Democratic Party in my mid to late 20s. But it was college that it started that evolution.
And it was specifically with West Monroe mayor, longtime mayor David Norris, right? Dave Norris?
Yeah, Dave was my economics professor. He taught me microeconomics in college. I guess it was my senior year, and he was at the time running for mayor of West Monroe. And the following year, I graduate, and I within about a year and a half, I was the local. I was working for the Monroe New Star World, a local Gannett daily paper, and I was given the assignment of covering West Monroe City Hall. And so, we sort of renewed our acquaintance, and I covered Dave for about a year and a half or so until I moved on to Shreveport to be the political writer at the Shreveport Journal. But he and I stayed friends, and we're still very close friends. And, you know, Dave was really, really very, very important in enormously important in my maturation as a person in general, but particularly looking at the world through the eyes that I do now. He was very patient with me. He didn't he didn't browbeat me. He just introduced me to new ways of looking at the world, and especially looking at people who are down and out, people who are quote-unquote on welfare, people who are having to take advantage of the social welfare system to survive. I wasn't particularly sympathetic to people in those kind of situations, and Dave really very patiently showed me and taught me to have more empathy for people in those kind of situations, and I owe so much to him in so many ways. He's still a dear, close friend of mine and a lifelong mentor, and I'm very happy that he came into my life and stays in my life.
I bumped into Dave Norris when I, too, was at ULM for a little while, and one thing I learned about Dave Norris is you never want to precede him at a speaking engagement.
He really is one of the funniest. He is a born raconteur, just the funniest guy, the quickest wit. He has it all. And I always kind of pushed him to run for Congress and, you know, to go further. He spent 40 years, as you know, as mayor of West Monroe and ran that city really well. But you know, he would have, if he'd run for Congress, if he'd run for the Senate, if he'd run for governor, he would have been an amazing leader on all those levels.
One can only wish.
Yep.
Now, one of the things you just mentioned has to do with your career as a journalist, and I don't know that I mentioned this too much in your introduction, but your early career and part of your book chapters are your work for the New Star, and then you went over and you became the Ruston. I believe you worked in Ruston, and you met what's his name? Hillier at the...
Wiley Hilburn.
Yep. And then you worked for the Shreveport Times. So why don't you talk a little bit about that journalistic focus?
Yeah. So, when I look back on my life, I'm I'm constantly amazed, and I think most people who do this are constantly amazed at the intersection, the people that intersect their lives, that come into their lives, some for long periods of time, some for brief periods of time, and make a big difference. And I was, my last semester at ULM, now then Northeast, now ULM, was the city editor of the Monroe New Star, and he saw some talent in me and recruited me to apply for a job as a reporter. And I got hired. And if I hadn't been in his class, I probably wouldn't have gotten hired for that job. But they sent me over to Ruston to be the Ruston bureau chief, which sounds important, but I was really the only employee over there. And I covered a four parish area of sort of north central Louisiana, from Union Parish to Wynn Parish to Jackson Parish to Wynn Parish. And I met some of the most interesting people and covered a little bit of everything. One day I was covering a funeral. The next day I might be covering a murder trial. The next day I might be, you know, reporting on a football game and covering a school board meeting. And it was just the best preparation for bigger journalism, just covering a little bit of everything and learning to write on deadline. A lot of my stories were dictated to a clerk in the newsroom while I was standing in a phone booth somewhere. And having to dictate on the fly, it just taught me a lot about writing and about journalism. And after a few years, Wiley Hilburn, who was the director of the journalism program at Louisiana Tech, I got to know him during my time in Ruston, and he recommended me to Stan Tyner, who was the editor of the Shreveport Journal, and they were looking for a political writer. And I just happened to luck into getting that job because of Wiley and Wiley's recommendation. And when I showed up, it was right before the 1983 governor's race between Edwin Edwards and then-Governor Dave Treen, and one of the first assignments I got was to spend a couple of months on the road riding around in the backseat of a car with Edwin Edwards covering his race. And it was the most interesting thing I'd ever done and remains one of the most interesting periods of my life, getting to see a gubernatorial campaign of that caliber up close and personal and get to know the candidates so well, because there really wasn't anybody else following them around at that time. And, I look back and I just really count myself my lucky stars for having all these opportunities and having these people who gave me those opportunities.
In case you just tuned in, we're talking today with journalist, former journalist, and now professor at the Manship School, Bob Mann, about his new book, Backrooms and Bayous, which is out, My Life in Louisiana Politics. And I think you can get it advance order now. And I think if you move quickly, you might even be able to get an autographed copy. I was going to ask about the Edwin Edwards. So you're a reporter, and the Shreveport Times assigned you to...
The Shreveport Journal, by the way.
Shreveport Journal, yeah. Assigned you to cover him. So as I understand, as you tell it in the book, there weren't really any other reporters traveling around with him for quite a while, so it was just you and Edwin Edwards and his driver roaming around the countryside. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. It was early in the summer, and as time went on, more people came along. And the last couple of months, it was a lot of reporters. But the Journal had just endorsed Edwin, and he didn't know me from Adam, and I'd never met him, but. Because the Journal had endorsed him, they were much more, Edwin and his people were much more amenable to having me around and were very welcoming to me. And, they probably had no business allowing a reporter to sit in the back seat of the car and observe what they were doing. But I was so green at the time, I probably wouldn't have recognized half of whatever they were doing if it were somehow unethical. But it was just an amazing experience because I got to spend a lot of time interviewing Edwin. One of the first assignments I had from the Journal was to write a big long profile piece on Edwards, and so I had long periods of time in the car being able to interview him about his life and his philosophy and his plans if he were reelected. And then I went around and interviewed his childhood friends, his mother and his wife, and all kinds of people in his life to put together this very lengthy profile of him that was, sort of like almost like a mini biography of Edwin Edwards that I really enjoyed, because I got to not just talk with Edwards, but all these people from various times of his life. And I realized looking back on that now that sort of was my training for the work that I ended up doing and writing books, because I learned that I really enjoyed doing that kind of research, and it's what I've been doing in my book writing for the past 30 years is, you know, doing that kind of research and writing it into longer pieces, in my case, books, but in that case, a very long piece of journalism.
Well, the obvious question here is you've written books on Ronald Reagan, on Lyndon Johnson, Hubert Humphrey, Richard Russell, on Russell Long, but you've never written a book about Edwin Edwards. How come? It seems like you have a lot of background there.
I just never got around to it, I guess. And you know, I was just doing other things, and I was at that time I was focusing more on writing about national politics, writing about the Vietnam War and the civil rights movement, and other topics. And the book I'm working on now is very much about Louisiana politics, but I just was not in the mode. I guess I was still in the mindset I want to write about national politics. I was writing books that were for more national, broad national consumption, which I'm still interested in writing about. But the older I get, the more interested I am about the history around me. And so maybe if I were to start over again today, I would, you know, Edwin would be a more interesting topic.
One of the things that's interesting about your book is it almost has a zealot kind of quality, meaning that you show up nearly everywhere that's anywhere in Louisiana politics over the last 40 years. So for anybody who's checking it all out or interested in that, they should definitely check out your book. One thing I wanted to ask you, and you alluded to it in your book, sometimes as a journalist, you feel like you strayed across the line between your personal feelings about a candidate and your journalism. And is that something that you were very careful not to do or to guard against?
Well, I tried to, maybe I wasn't, I think what I decided in the book was I wasn't as careful as I should have been. And some of the scrapes I got myself into, or some of the bad situations I got myself into, it was almost always because I wasn't acting ethically. And I think I tried to be as honest as I could be in the book about the times where I did fail myself and others. And, you know, one of the examples is when I'm traveling around with Edwin, and he's attacking Dave Treen for, you know, not doing his job. And I helpfully, quote-unquote, helpfully volunteered an anecdote to the former governor, about how Treen had delayed responding to a natural disaster in Monroe while I was over there covering news in Monroe for the New Star World. And Edwin thought that was very interesting and worked it into his speeches for the next few days. And I realized, whoa, that's not really the role I should be playing, giving Edwin Edwards fodder for his campaign speeches. I was just, you know, at a basic level, just trying to make conversation. But at another level, I was trying to impress him, and I was trying to do more than I should have done. And it's those moments where I look back and say, you know, that was really, I shouldn't have done that. I just shouldn't have done that. That was not ethical. And as you know from reading the book, I tried to discuss a number of other places where I just thought I didn't meet the standards that I was taught by my journalism professors and others in college. And, you know, I try to be honest about it as much as I could be.
Now, a large part of your book is focusing on the work that you did for not one, not two, but three United States senators. So maybe you could talk to us a little bit. You were with Russell Long for quite a while.
Well, I worked for Senator Long for his last 2 years in office, and then spent another 4 years, quote unquote, working with him as I was writing his biography. So we spent a lot of time together over those years, and then, you know, even after that, we maintained a friendship. And you know, I've loved Russell Long and Carolyn Long, his wife, and still very close with his daughter Kay and his grandson Russell and people like that. So they became, you know, quote unquote, family to me. But working for Long was just such a treat, because as a kid who grew up interested in politics, and this is the son of Huey Long, you know, this is a living, walking, breathing connection to this remarkable, incredible politician who had and still has such an impact on on my state's politics. And when I went to work for Long in January of 1985, that was the year that that was going to be the 50th anniversary of his father's assassination in September of 1935. And shortly after I went to work for Long, he said to me, I need to give a speech in the Senate on the day of my father's death, and I want you to help me with the speech. And it really kind of overwhelmed me, because I thought, and I told him, I said, how can I possibly write that speech for you? You know, that's just more than any person could do. This is such a personal thing for you. And so I came up with the idea that why don't I just interview you about your father, and we'll get it transcribed, and then let me sort of massage that into a speech that you and I can work on. And he thought that was a good idea. So I had the rare pleasure of sitting around for hours and hours and hours over a couple of months, just interviewing Russell Long about you, just talking to Russell Long about Huey Long. And again, you know, it was one of those moments that I realized, now looking back, prepared me for the kind of work that I do now, which was interviewing and writing books. And it's what also persuaded me that I could write a book about Russell Long, because he and I work so well together on the speech about his father.
Now, is there anything that he conveyed in your interviews with him about his father, Huey Long, that stands out to you?
Well, it was just, you know, he was a kid when his father died. You know, his father, he was 16 years old. And a lot of what he knew about his father was told to him by relatives, his mother and his Uncle Earl, and other friends of his father. And but what came through in all of these conversations was that, you know, he had really lived his life, really shaped his career around trying to fulfill his father's legacy and vindicate his father's reputation. And it was just an enormous amount of affection and love that he had for his father. Whatever you want to say about Huey Long, and there's a lot to be said about Huey Long, what came through to me with Russell Long was how proud he was of his dad and how much he loved him. And, you know, that speech that we worked on, he gave a version of it at the State Library in Baton Rouge a couple of days before the anniversary of his father's death. It might have been on the anniversary of his father's shooting, as a matter of fact. But anyway, he gives this speech, and we get in the car afterwards, and he was very silent. He just didn't say anything. It was a very emotional moment, because it was the first time he'd given that speech that he would have given this and on the Senate floor a couple of days later. And we're driving away, and he just is sort of lost in thought for a few minutes, and finally he just says, "That was for Dad. I owed him that." And it was, you know, this sense of, I really want to honor my father, and I really want people to look at my father in a different way, and this is the one chance that I may have that for that to happen. So, you know, I just came away with, you know, just, to, you know, whatever, again, whatever you think about Huey Long, I think it's undeniable that his son would have made him proud, and his son really was a great, you know, was a good son who was really devoted to his father's memory, and I respect that a lot.
You ended up working for J. Bennett Johnston, then you went on to marry Landrieu.
And John Breaux.
And John Breaux, that's right.
17 years for Breaux.
17 years, so there's an enormous chapter there. Your book conveys lots of information about your working with John Breaux and funny, and apparently you were almost kindred spirits or found yourself so. Your last big governmental assignment was working with Kathleen Blanco and her administration. What was your role with Kathleen Blanco? And there was kind of a falling out that you had at some point, or a chilling out that led you to look for other career opportunities?
Yeah, well, so I was working for John Breaux at the time as his state director here in Baton Rouge, and Kathleen had gotten into the runoff with Bobby Jindal in 2003. And she was very close to Breaux. I'd known the Blancos for a number of years. You know, you work in Louisiana politics, you get to know these people, and I'd gotten to know her and Coach pretty well over the years. And so one day Breaux calls me up and says, look, I'm sending you over to work for Kathleen through the end of the election. And that was the first I'd heard of this, and I wasn't really all that excited about it, because I was not really looking to get involved in any more campaigns. As I write in the book, it sort of brought out the worst in me. And I didn't like that side of me, but, you know, Breaux told me to do it, so I went and did it. And I just, you know, I fell in love with her and felt it was a fun campaign, and we won against all odds. And on election night, she offered me the job working for her. She initially asked me to be her policy director, and I eventually turned that down and then accepted a position as her communications director and did that for 2.5 years through Katrina. And it was really Katrina and the fallout of Katrina afterwards, you know, it was just a difficult time for a lot of people on our staff, and I was one of those people who I think I just decided that my usefulness to her I'd outlived my usefulness to her, and I needed to move on and find something else to do. And this opportunity at LSU had come up, and I jumped at it. And it was one of the best decisions I ever made. But we stayed on really good terms. You know, maybe we had a little bit of a period where we weren't best of friends. But you know, later in her life, we reestablished our relationship, and you know, I loved her. I thought she was a wonderful person, and her husband, Coach, is still one of my favorite people in the world. And just I had lunch with him a few months ago, and I still count her as one of the more important people in my life, and I'm really thankful for my time working for her.
We have been talking this morning with Bob Mann, who's a professor at the Manship School, about his new book, Backrooms and Bayous, My Life in Louisiana Politics, which will be coming out just as we speak. You should pick up a copy. This is a very interesting book for those people who are interested in Louisiana politics and Louisiana life. We got just like 20 seconds. Is this your most personal book?
Oh, by far. It's my only personal book, because it's really the only time I've ever bothered to stop and write about myself.
Well, we certainly learned a lot about you and about your storied career. I can't imagine a more storied career in Louisiana politics. Thanks for joining us this morning, Bob.
Thank you, Pearson.
Bayou de Bellway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org. krvs.org.
Blues is a universal solvent in music. There's blues in jazz, roots rock and soul, country, Cajun, Latin, funk, hip-hop, and pop. We'll hear about that. Plus, we're live with electric country blues elder Little Freddie King. The mystery and power of blues on American Roots from PRX.
Friday afternoons at 1, following the Blues Box.
Play me some blues, Herman Fugelet.
I'll play you some Zydeco blues and R&B classics on the Zydeco Stomp, noon Saturdays here on KRVS. Get ready for some Clifton Chenier, Keith Frank, Etta James, Leon Chavis, Irma Thomas, and so many more. Barbecue and drink a few with me, Herman Fugelet, on the Zydeco Stomp, 12 to 3 Saturdays on KRVS, 88.7 FM, and from Guam to Gaydon at krvs.org.
Easy, baby.
This program was made possible in part by contributions to KRVS Public Radio from listeners like you. Thank you.
Sounds and Instruments. Discover them Thursday nights at 11 p.m. on the Minor Chord here on KRVS.
Support comes from The Vermilion, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette's student-run newspaper, which offers students paid positions. For additional information, contact Matthew Tarver at mtarver@louisiana.edu or call 337-482-6958, 337-482-6958.
KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.